So I thought this evening to talk about one of the more popular topics that are popular and that seems to be the one that comes up quite frequently in questions. Seems to be a high concern of a lot of people. And that is the topic of anger. I once showed up at a sitting group and I was going to give a talk on awakening, enlightenment, liberation, the highest ideals of Buddhism. Before I was going to start my talk, I said, is there anything that you would like to ask me or anything important issues you'd like to bring up or something? And we never got to awakening because we spent the whole time in talking about anger. Somehow people were more interested in anger than they were about awakening. Anger is quite a common emotion for many people. And it can be quite intense and quite difficult in our lives. In its minor versions, it can appear as aversion. And aversion is something we become very sensitive to as we meditate, because aversion can be very small movements of the mind, rejecting things, not wanting that, pushing something away, resisting something. And it can be as subtle as, you know, having aversion to an itch or aversion to a certain sensation in the body or aversion to your thinking or your particular kinds of thoughts or aversion to kind of sound in the room. It can be very subtle. And then it could be quite intense. It could be full-blown rage at just about anything. It's sometimes been said that American culture is a culture which has a strong streak of anger as part of it. It's kind of like an angry culture of sorts. And that's a kind of a mere gross generalization. But I certainly have noticed that in my travels around the world that of the countries I've been to, America is up there among the ones where anger is about more prevalent and more obvious. Manifestation in society and in individuals. And I think that in some ways our society is anger-provoking for many of its members of our society. And then there's a very strange tension, or I don't know if paradox is the right word, where certain parts of our culture, our society, have the conditions that provoke anger in people, especially people who are subordinates, in the subordinate positions in our culture. And then, because you're in a subordinate position, it's not okay to express your anger to the people above you. I think that's been an experience, I don't know how true it is anymore, but certainly of women. Women had a lot of good cause for being angry in our society. But women aren't supposed to be angry. You know, women who were angry were, you know, they were given names starts with B. I didn't say that. And so, certainly, have people that in certain kind of work situations. Subordinates at work sometimes are not given kind of respect they're due, or sometimes are disrespected in many ways. And there's cause for being frustrated or being angry. But it can be very, very frightening then to let that anger be expressed so that the people above you see it or feel it. And in fact, sometimes I've been in situations where the superiors in a situation will say, oh, that's your problem that you're angry. That's your personal problem. It's nothing to do with the situation, nothing to do with me. You have to go work on yourself. More meditation, more therapy, more whatever, you know. But it's nothing to do with the situation. And there are many situations which are angry-provoking. Or at least provoke the conditions for anger. They cause pain, they cause fear, hurt. They challenge our integrity. And I think this is quite pervasive in our culture. It leads to a lot of frustration. And because of many people are not familiar of how, don't know how to be present for their anger, because they can't give expression to it in healthy ways, or they can't talk about it in healthy ways, or even see it for themselves, then, you know, as we all know, then it often goes in subterranean ways and causes a lot of damage under the surface. I read once a little quote about a doctor who lived in the 18th century. And this doctor said something like, my life is in the hands of anyone who stimulates anger in me. So that's kind of an interesting statement, you know. My life is in the hands of anyone who stimulates anger. Anybody who provokes anger in me. And then the little discussion this poor man continued and said that he died having a heart attack at a board meeting in his hospital in a fit of anger. The tremendous impact that anger can have on our being. I mean, that's quite dramatic a case, but. And all kinds of ways in which our health is compromised by unhealthy experiences with anger, or repressed anger. So what is anger? And how do we relate to it, and how is it part of practice? Anger makes it very difficult to be present. Many people don't want to get close to anger. They feel the anger coming and they stay far away from it. They turn off, they shut down. I know plenty enough people, including myself, who didn't want to acknowledge any anger at all existed within us. And the acknowledgement went so far as we couldn't even see it for ourselves. I couldn't see my own anger at certain times. I was angry, but I didn't have a clue. Amazing enough. So how do we bring more awareness to anger? Buddhist practice talks a lot about the importance of noticing anger. Because anger is one of the great challenges to being present. It's also one of the great challenges to being compassionate and loving, to being at peace, which are kind of ideals that Buddhism holds up as being worthwhile to pursue. However, that one of the very difficult challenges for people engaged in Buddhist practice is that the ideals of peace, of compassion, of love, gives the impression that anger is bad or wrong. If you're really a cool Buddhist, then you're just cool. You know, you never get angry. You're always peaceful, always loving. And there's something fundamentally flawed with you as a Buddhist practitioner if you ever get angry. And you should have it together. So, I've been in lots of Buddhist communities where people would get angry, but because they're good Buddhists, they couldn't acknowledge it or see it or express it, or they kind of repressed it because they're supposed to be always be peaceful and kind. And Buddhist practice, that's a misunderstanding of Buddhist practice. Buddhist practice in no way judges anger as being bad or as being wrong or inappropriate. It doesn't particularly judge it as being accurate or good or useful. It just doesn't judge it. Can you believe it? It doesn't justify it, and it doesn't condemn it, though it does point out that anger is very painful. The Buddha once said that likened an angry person to someone who tried to look at the reflection in a surface of water, like in a pot of water, where the water was boiling furiously. And in that, the water is not still enough to reflect your face. When you're angry, we tend not to see very clearly. It tends to inhibit our clear understanding and seeing of a situation. And I've known in my own life that I've made a lot of things I regretted later because I acted on those things, said those things while I was angry. Sometimes I can believe that I understand something accurately. But the filter of anger really distorts the situation dramatically. And I've kind of made a policy to try the best I can not to say anything or not to make decisions while I'm angry. But that's in no way repressing my anger or discounting it. It's just simply waiting until the anger has passed before I take action. If I can, you know, if it's you know, as long as it's not, you know, something of imminent harm. So this is very interesting. The Buddhist practice doesn't criticize anger in any kind of way. The function of Buddhist practice, in a sense, is to open ourselves fully to the anger so we can really see it and let it course through us as freely as it wants. And as it wants is really the key expression, not how you want it to go through you. One of the great difficulties with anger is we identify with it, and people can make huge philosophies justifying it and get behind it, and it gives them a lot of sense of vitality and energy, and there's a lot of stuff people get from it, but people latch on to the anger and then fuel it and act on it, and that's not what we're asking to do either. We're not asked to indulge in it, but we're certainly not asked to forget about it and repress it and hide it. We're asked to let it move through us the way it wants to kind of get out of the way of it, but not push it away. And it's really wonderful to feel the anger kind of bubbling up and doing its things in the jaws and shoulders and the stomach, and, you know, doing what it does. It does a lot of stuff in the body. You sit there and, you know, feel the energy. And just to feel anger at an energetic level is a great thing. It's partly just energy and sensations and tightness and tensions in the body. So what is anger? I think that from a point of view of Buddhist practice, anger is always to be respected. We might ask, you know, is there ever appropriate anger? Is there ever a time when it's appropriate to get angry? Someone asked the Dalai Lama this in a famous exchange once. Is there ever a time when it's okay to be angry? It was a big room, I was told, big auditorium. He has these big audiences, right? 10,000 people. So someone asked, hey. And he was quiet for a long time. And the person who told me about this was there, and he said, the sense you had was he was scanning the universe. As you see, is there ever a time when it's appropriate to get angry? And finally, I guess he opened his eyes and he said, no. So, I don't know, you know, what he was thinking of when he was doing that, but there is a distinction to be made between getting angry and being angry. In getting angry in the sense of acting on our anger, arousing our anger intentionally, or being angry and then fueling it or indulging in it or using it in ways to talk to other people or to act in certain ways. Being angry to some degree is just a response, oftentimes. Getting angry is something we do and choose to do. There's a choice involved in it. So when we be angry, when we find ourselves responding in an angry way, I believe that it's always something to be respected. It's never to be discounted. Because anger is a symptom that there's something wrong somewhere. Something somewhere is wrong. There's a symptom of suffering. That something is off. No one gets angry unless something somewhere is off. Someone is suffering. Something is wrong. And in Buddhist practice, we're very interested in bringing our attention to that which is off, to that place where there's suffering, to that place where we feel something is off. So the question is, where is it? Where is that which is off? Is it in the object that you're angry at, or is it in you yourself? And in different circumstances, you might answer that question differently. You might say that what's off is there's some great injustice happening in the world that you're being subjected to, and that somehow your anger is an integrity protecting device. It's a movement to protect your integrity against your integrity being violated by some people around you. the situation around you. And the anger is telling you, oh, there's something wrong here in the environment. Someone's disrespecting me. Someone is trying to harm me. And so that's very important to know that. And if you know that, if you know what the other person's people are doing, then maybe there's wiser ways of responding than getting angry back. There's many ways of responding. Anger is just one of them. I remember some years ago, a woman came to me in, here in Palo Alto, and she was afraid to go downtown, in the evening especially. And she wanted to buy a gun. And she wanted to know what I thought about that. And I don't want to be in this situation of advising people about getting or not getting guns, though I have my strong opinion. But what I pointed out was that for many people in America, guns are the first and immediate response for self-protection that many people have. And they don't go to the trouble to learn many of the other, perhaps more useful ways of responding to threatening situations. But sometimes it takes some education in nonviolent defense, or there's many kinds of trainings that we can get in order to find out other creative ways of responding to threats. I think I've told this story here recently of my friend at the San Francisco Zen Center who was held up at knife point on the streets in front of Zen Center, and another friend of him walked by and walked into the building and just walked by and walked into the building, and later the friend who was held up came into the building and said, oh, by the way, when you walked by me, I was being held up. Oh, I didn't notice anything wrong. You guys seem to be having a little conversation. He said, oh, yeah. He held me up. He wanted my money. And I said, my wallet. And I said, well, you can have my money, but I really need my wallet. I need my driver's license. And, you know, otherwise it's kind of rough for me. And because I stayed calm and present and kind of engaged him I kind of sensed who he was. And it felt like it was appropriate to engage him. And I engaged him with my calmness. I wasn't afraid. He happily took my wallet and took money out and gave it back. And we had this little exchange and he left. So I'm not recommending you do that, but I have lots of stories like that I can tell you of people who have been in harm's way, who didn't respond in angry way, didn't respond in aggressive ways, but because of some ability to be calm and centered in the situation, could think of alternative ways of responding and the situation unfolding completely differently. So if we recognize, oh, I'm angry because there's something wrong here, something's off, and then using that energy of anger to investigate what is it that's off here, then we can really see what's called for, what action is called for here. It might be more useful than yelling or screaming or punching out or whatever we might do when we get angry, or running away. Some people, when they get angry, prefer just to run away, and it's so painful to be angry. Now, it's very tricky because one of the very common phenomena with anger is for people to assign blame automatically elsewhere, as if always the problem is outside of oneself. It's never here, of course, you know. This is not, I'm always fine, thank you. If I'm angry, it's a proof that there's some problem outside of me with other people. Sometimes anger is a symptom that what's off is inside of you, not in the world around you. And sometimes the anger requires us to look inside ourselves and see what is the attachment, what is the frustration, what is the fear, what's the sense of threat that's happening inside of us. Because sometimes anger can arise out of threat and frustration of something that has only to do with our self-centeredness, only to do with our neurotic desires. And we want something. It's really important to want something. Our self-identity is tied into wanting that or getting that. We have a whole culture that supports, you know, our desires, as we talked about a few weeks ago. And then if our desires are frustrated, a common response is to be angry. And then we can assign the blame outside. Oh, it's society, it's culture, it's other people who are not interfering with my desire. But really the problem is the way we hold our desire. There's an attachment, a clinging to it. And we need to look really honestly at what is going on inside of us. What is it? What is that meeting inside of us? I wanted to read a little piece from the Buddha Suttas, the Discourses of the Buddha. An annoyed man once came and heaped abuse on the Buddha. The Buddha then asked him if he ever received visits from friends and relatives. When the man said he did, the Buddha asked him if he offered them food. When the man again replied in the affirmative, the Buddha asked what happens when they don't accept these gifts. The man said that his unaccepted gifts still belong to him. The Buddha said, "So it is. The abuse, the scolding, the reviling that you hurl at us, at me, who do not abuse or scold or revile, we do not accept from you. It belongs to you. It is all yours." So if someone is angry with you, annoying you, or criticizing you, what is it meeting inside of you? In the Buddha, he's saying that it meets nothing inside of him. He doesn't take it on. Is it possible? So a very important investigation is, when you feel off or get angry, what is the circumstances around you meeting inside of you? What's it encountering? Because it has to encounter something for you to get angry. And what is it encountering in you? What's it coming up against, the situation? If I get angry because it seems to me that they've... I had to go home, I'd go through kind of this, what's it called, Arboretum Way through Stanford Shopping Center. And they're doing all this work there. And I have the impression that they've changed the timing of the red lights there. So, like, I have to wait a lot longer now for the red light that always goes on. You know, so I go through the green light and the next one's red always now. It used to be green. It kept driving. So, you know, I noticed this the other day that I get a little bit annoyed. You know, why do they do this? So I could just say, well, it's these, you know, city traffic light people who are just stupid. And leave it at that. But something has the light's there, which is just a neutral event in the universe, in a sense, is meeting something inside of me. And what's it meeting? It's meeting my impatience to get home. And I have to take honest assessment of my contribution, because my impatience doesn't have to be there. I don't have to be impatient. And if I'm not impatient, then the red light doesn't meet anything. So what is it meeting inside of you? What attachment, what fear, what sense of threat? What sense of ego, what sense of self-identity are you holding on to? The anger is a self-protection, integrity-protecting movement, but it can also be an identity-protecting movement. And integrity and identity are two very radically different animals. Identity is... as something we hold on to and say, this is who I am and this is what I need to be to show, this is how I need to project myself to other people, and this is how I need to see myself, this is how I want other people to see me. And that's all really unnecessary as something we hold on to. And it has nothing to do with our integrity. And it's possible not to have that sense of identity for anything to encounter. There was a story of an executive type who was very skilled, great executive type, and very competent and got a lot done for his company. But he had one problem, and that was when he got up in front of big meetings, he was a little afraid and he'd pee in his pants. So the CEO of this company thought, well, this isn't, you know, it doesn't work so well. So I'm gonna send him to the psychologist. So he sent him to the psychologist, and he came back some weeks later, and the CEO asked, "Are you cured?" And he said, "Oh yeah, I'm cured. I'm no longer embarrassed." So, you know, so there was no self-identity for that situation to, you know, encounter. I don't know if that joke kind of champions the cause of going around without any self-identity, but what is in a situation where you get angry, what is that's off? What's going on here? Anger is always a symptom that there's suffering somewhere. Where is that suffering? What's the nature of that suffering? And that's why in Buddhism we don't criticize anger or say it's good or bad. In a sense, maybe we could say it's always good, in that it's always a symptom that there's suffering. And in Buddhism, we're quite interested in getting to know our suffering better and studying it. We don't want to gloss over or pretty over or ignore or deny our suffering, if there's suffering there. We want to take a very honest look at it and get to know it better. And a lot of the skills of mindfulness and being present, of being calm, is in the service of not being a victim of your suffering, but rather turning around and looking at it very clearly and very honestly, and then learning the causes and conditions of learning what is inside of you that's being met. What are you contributing to the situation that causes your suffering? Is there something that you're contributing to the situation that doesn't have to be there? Or if it's your integrity that's being threatened, how do you respond? How can you respond? How should you respond to the situation around you? How do you speak it? There are a number of very unskillful ways of relating to anger. One is to get lost too much in the story of blame and responsibility. We can go endlessly and rehearse and rehearse and rehearse. You know, who did what to who? You can't argue with anger. There's no doubt. When you're angry, you're angry. You might be angry for the wrong reasons, but you're angry. So if you look for the reasons before fully acknowledging the anger, you might lose a window to understand the whole situation better. I find that when I'm angry with someone, I try not to make a decision when I'm angry. I try not to act on it if I can. But if it's appropriate, I try to tell the person I'm angry. Because that's a true statement. I don't know whether what I'm angry about is true or not. But I know that my anger is true. So in mindfulness practice, we try to speak the truth. We don't try to speak our interpretations. And it's very important to learn the difference between the two. We try to speak what we really feel, what's really going on for us. And if you're angry, you can say, I'm angry. The person doesn't have to know why you're angry, maybe, or just... But that statement doesn't have to be done in an assertive way or an aggressive way. Many years ago, I was angry with the chairman of my department. And I was a TA and in graduate school. And it wasn't the kind of person that, you know, is good to be angry with. And I was really angry with him, at him, boy. He had treated me kind of badly. I was TA for him. And I was unusually furious. And I felt at that time that I had to go talk to him. And I didn't know how to talk to him except to tell him that I was angry. And I showed up, and I was actually shaking. And I told him how angry I was. But there was absolutely no blame or no criticism of him. It was just a very personal statement about how I was feeling. And because I was making no statement towards him, I wasn't attacking him or criticizing him or saying he'd done anything wrong, he was able to take in the fact that I was really angry and continue the conversation in a participatory way as opposed to his defenses going up. And then pretty quickly it was diffused and we took care of the situation and he got the message from me that I, you know, that it was obvious that, you know, he shouldn't do this again. So I find it valuable to stop for anger. When anger is there, to kind of stop, in a sense, to pay attention more carefully. It's like a mindfulness bell that says, "Hey, dummy, there's something really valuable here for you to pay attention to." And sometimes that means walking away from a situation and going for a walk, sitting quietly. Sometimes it can be very valuable to go talk to a friend when you're angry. Just find some neutral friend who's not involved and just talk. Talking is really great. And sometimes it's what you best to do is just sit quietly and experience it in meditation. And when you experience it in meditation, what we're trying to do is to open to the sensations and feelings of anger as they course through our body. And try not to inhabit or live in the story making that we make about it, but to live in the direct experience of the anger right here and now, and let it move through us and process us and show us and reveal to us what's going on for us in the moment-to-moment experience of it. When a frustrating situation meets our self-identity, or meets our impatience, or meets our driven desires, the driven desires, the impatience, the frustration, the self-identity didn't happen once far in the past and then you remain angry. It continues to live in the present moment. And as we learn to drop out of the story and experience it more directly, what's happening here and now in our body and in our senses, what you'll tend to do is to start noticing very clearly. All the extras will drop away, and what will be left is what you're actually doing in the present moment. If you stay rehearsing the situation and what happened and what you should do, you can't really let all the extras fall away and let what you're contributing to the situation stand out in stark highlight. And this is one of the great values of meditation, is to let yourself become so simple with the anger that what you're contributing to it just really stands out strongly. You can see, oh, it's impatient, or see, oh, self-identity, oh. And then you can decide what to do with that. I like the word respect as an attitude that's closely connected to this practice. In part because the word respect literally means to look again. Respect, like spectacle. To look again. We respect something by giving it a second look, looking more deeply at what's going on here. And getting to know it better. And I think mindfulness practice is a practice of tremendous respect of our life. And one of the things that behooves our respect is our anger. It's always a sign and symptom of something deeper that needs to be attended to. And if you discount your anger, then you discount that cue, there's something deeper for you to look at here. And then once you can start being present for anger, you want to see if you can develop those skills of exploring it more fully, opening to more fully, letting it course through you without a story. And that ability to open fully to an emotion, to be an open conduit for strong emotions, that ability, that capacity, is the same capacity you'll need to be an open conduit for joy and happiness. And ultimately, maybe you can say, more ultimately we'd say in Buddhist practice, we don't really care what the content of your awareness is for the purposes of mindfulness meditation. What we care about is that you become an open conduit to whatever state of mind, whatever content of experience you're having. If you're anger, to be an open conduit for that. If you're feeling happiness, to be an open conduit for that. If it swings back and forth between the two of them, to be an open conduit for the change. And doing that, you'll find yourself much more at peace in your life. And the more peaceful you are in your life, the less reason you'll find to be angry. So that's my thoughts about anger. It's a hot topic. There are people who are ready to kill based on their opinion about anger. So have I stepped on any toes? Yes?
No toes. You mentioned the difference between threats to integrity and threats to identity. How do you define integrity, just to clarify that?
It's a hard one for me to know how to define. Integrity is connected to a fundamental sense of self-worth, inherent self-worth that we all have. In the Western terminology, are kind of like human rights. The idea of human rights comes out of a fundamental divine sense of worth that everyone seems to have or does have. And if some kind of fundamental kind of self-worth that all people have that deserve respect from others, if that's being threatened in some way, if the humanity of you, if someone's overlooking your humanity and violating that, intentionally causing you harm, that is a violation of your integrity, of your wholeness, of your respect as a human being. It's interesting, though, that I once looked up in the dictionary the root etymology of the word respect, integrity. And I didn't know what to do with the result first, because according to my dictionary, integrity meant came from the Latin words that which can't be touched. And that's kind of odd, can't be touched. And that's where I thought about it. That makes sense to me. You're actually, it's an, our integrity actually can never be violated. But we think it can be. And because we think it can be, it gets, you know, it can get pretty hard, pretty awful. But one of the great discoveries, I think, through deep meditation practice, is to discover the fundamentally untouchable core of integrity in each of us. That no matter what anybody does to us, we can find something which is never violated, can't be violated, can't be hurt at all. It's a very vulnerable or tender place. So that tenderness then sometimes will get entangled with a lot of other senses of hurt. And also the idea of integrity gets tied up with our self-identity. Not very many people see the difference between the two. And one of the important issues as practice gets deeper is to see the difference between the two. Yes?
I've been watching my anger for a while and realizing that I've placed myself in some ongoing situations working on projects and such which have a lot of conflict. And so I set about trying to either remove myself from these kind of situations or rearrange them somehow. And I realized that to a certain extent I was simply looking for fights. There was one case where I went down, we had a meeting, we resolved something, and it was not going to be conflict anymore. And I got in the car and I hadn't gotten out of the parking lot when I noticed that I was having a conversation in my mind over some other issue that had nothing to do with the one that I had just resolved, but was conflict, and I was feeling angry in exactly the same way. So it occurred to me that for some reason I seem to be just looking for things to be angry about, and I'm a little concerned about that.
You should be. But it's something to be studied, and this is something to be respected also and looked at deeply. Sometimes anger has nothing to do with the situation. Anger can have other functions. I know there are some people who get angry because it's enlivening. And the only way they have some sense of really being alive and vital is that they get good and angry. Like some people will go to horror movies because only when they get really afraid will they feel that sense of, you know, it's kind of like caffeine of the soul. So to ask, what does it do for you that might be helpful? The other thing is that the anger sometimes is misplaced pain. Sometimes we might feel a lot of very deep pain or self-reproach or something inside of ourselves, and we don't want to touch it in ourselves. And so we recoil from it, but we have to take it somewhere. And then it's very common to kind of direct it in blame or criticism elsewhere. And as long as we're engaged in criticizing other people and find it justified to criticize other people, then we don't have to look at what's really going on for us, which is the pain. But in that sense, that pain is always there, so you have to always find an object to avoid the pain with. And so it doesn't really matter, you know. So you solve one angry situation, and then you look for another one. That's one other possibility. Yes.
Doesn't a lot of anger stem from fear?
A lot of anger comes from fear, but not all anger. Some comes from hurt, frustration, frustrated desire. But that fear is very common. So one of the interesting issues is to see, What is the source of the anger? And if we don't stop for the anger and look at it carefully, if we just kind of believe it and act on it and go on with our life, And then we don't understand the underlying causes that are stimulating it. It's best to think of anger as a symptom. And your job is to find out what's the trigger for it. And you'll often find fear. But not always. One of the great things of learning to sit still in meditation is then learning how to metaphorically sit still in the midst of strong emotions in daily life. To have the ability to just feel the anger come on and just be an open conduit to it, or just be a still conduit for it, or be a non-reactive conduit for it. To learn how to be still and just, oh, there's all this anger. Wow. Just let it be there. Learning how to just let it be there and just be still. It's very empowering.
I had advice from a very good counselor one time. I can't always follow this advice, but when I can, I find it's really enlightening, truly enlightening. She would say, I would be speaking with her about some incredibly distressing thing, some very angry emotional thing, and she would always just say, oh, well, isn't that nice? Just be grateful for that. You know, so she would. And when I can do that, it really does, you know, of course, turn it absolutely
sure.
Clear in that paradoxical way. So sometimes a nice trick.
Well, I think it doesn't have to be a trick. It's actually be a very real sense. It's actually true. What we learned and through the mindfulness practice, that if you can learn to be mindful of your distress, of your emotions, of your anger, all these things, they're all wonderful gateways into some real depth in yourself, some real depth of connection with yourself. And so you don't have to turn away from anything, but you can use everything that comes your way as a way of going deeper into who you really are. And so you can say, yeah, it's nice, great, it's here. But it's very important to distinguish between the arising of strong emotions in the presence and then fueling them and acting on them, right? Yes?
Jill, just to follow that up, though, I mean, I find, like, you know, my kid is painted red on my yellow walls, okay? And there's not much time between the explosive anger and the get the soap and clean these walls. And it's nice in theory to say, okay, now I'm going to sit with this anger, and my kid's looking at me like I'm nuts. I'm trying to think of situations where I'm angry because I guess I have a reactive or an explosive anger, and where I would just all of a sudden sit there and try and meditate on my anger. I mean,
Well, yeah, I wouldn't let my son continue painting on the walls either. But I've had occasion now to be angry with my son. And
please tell me how you deal with it.
And there have been times where I looked back and said, that was unskillful. But there are times when you do something comparable to that, where I'll be angry, but I don't necessarily express the anger, but in a very strong way, I pick him up and move him away from the situation. You know, and I sit down and explain to him, you can't do this the best I can, whatever makes sense to a 2-year-old.
Right, and then...
But I'm not yelling at him or screaming at him, just, I'm angry inside, but I know how to let the anger be there and not act on it. I recognize it there. But the action that I do can be actually be sometimes very calm.
Right. I mean, I don't yell at my kids, but I'm just thinking. I mean, my reaction is to get them remove them from the situation, let's say, or I don't know, in an exchange with an adult, say something bad. I mean, you're acting on your anger, and then it diffuses it right away, and then, okay, I can move on. So I'm just trying to see where I would actually sit back and sit with my anger, because it's, it diffuses quickly once I get him or her, you know.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, so anger sometimes can get results. And then once the one situation is taken care of, then you can just go on with your life happily.
Right.
However, the interesting question is to ask, is what are the long-term consequences of using anger to get what we want? And especially, are there other alternative ways of getting what we want besides anger? It varies a lot from my son, the strategy we'll use. But one of the amazing strategies that works with our son, when he's doing something we don't want him to do, is to ignore him. We just look at, since he was quite young, if there was something we didn't want him to do, if we kind of chase after him and get angry and say, don't do that, he just wants to do it more.
Mm-hmm.
But if we just look at him and see that we don't want him to do something, we look away. And this kind of takes a little bit of trust, you know. But over and over again, the trust has been fulfilled. You know, he's not getting any attention, and he realizes he's not going to get any, and he'll stop doing it. Just like that. It's quite amazing. So that's, you know, it works for our son. So it's an alternative to being angry. You know, I could get into a huge fight with him and lift him up and spank him, and I'd prefer just look. Some of the other alternatives might take a little bit longer in the short term, but they'll save you a lot of time in the long term. In terms of, you know, how to deal with anger in daily life, it's a huge topic. One of the important things for meditation, and what I'm trying to get across today, is that when you sit and meditate, if you're angry, you find anger coming up in your meditation, to really appreciate it there, that this is something you want to really attend to carefully and bring your attention to and learn how to be still and quiet and attentive to this phenomenon here. Not to discount it or feel like it's bad meditation, but take it as a great opportunity. And then if you learn to do it in meditation, it'll spill over into wiser skills in daily life. So today, let's end with our sitting. In learning to be mindful of anger, we're learning not to be controlled by our anger. And the less time we spend controlled by our anger, the more time we have for happiness and love and for peace. May all of you be freed from the control of anger. Thank you all, and good night.